You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 312, and today we're going to be talking about the biblical view of humanity. Which is a very broad and important subject. Obviously, when it comes to worldviews, we have a few different options in our world today about how people view human beings. Did we descend from ape-like ancestors? Did we crawl out of the pond? And did we get here because some aliens long ago seeded our planet through panspermia? You know, there's lots of theories, lots of ideas out there, and then there's the biblical one, which is that God created us in his image, and we were created from the very beginning with that value, dignity, and purpose that comes from being made in many ways like our Creator, made to reflect his goodness, made to reflect that character of justice, love, and that sense of authority, which is given to us as a reflection of his authority over all of creation. And so from the opening pages of Scripture, we see not only that God created us male and female, so there's a very binary statement right there, but God created us male and female in the image of God. He created us. And then it goes on to say that we were created to rule over the other creatures of the earth. So that would be all the animals that we see. God designed that we would be reflecting something of his rule to the rest of creation. As people have talked about this, this is the royal side of humanity. This is our great dignity that we've been placed here with this special purpose that other creatures don't have. And so because of that, we are the crown of creation. And this, of course, is hugely impactful for the way we view ourselves and one another. Because if my neighbor is the descendant of an ape-like ancestor that came about through a random, natural, unguided process, then that will influence the way I look at him and the way I respond to him and whether or not I even care about what's going on in his life, let alone where he's going to spend eternity. But if I believe that he was made in the image of my Father, God, if he's the image of the Creator King who made all of us, then that drastically changes the way I should think about him. It should shape the way I view him, and my interest in his life should be greatly enhanced because now I see someone who God made, literally, the purpose behind his life is to reflect God. And that's no small thing. And so, maybe just to kind of begin the conversation, Jamie, I think what I see in the world today, in our culture, I'll say it this way, is that many people are wanting to be able to define right and wrong for themselves. They're wanting to choose their own identity and to kind of define themselves and be their own captain and master of their own fate, all those things. Which, of course, leaves out any reference to a creator. And yet, as much as that sounds very freeing to many people, it's especially if you're, you know, thinking in terms of just purely living whatever way you want, that sounds good to leave out a creator. But if you're asking, where does my value come from? And what is my purpose in life? And what's the meaning to my existence? All these kind of deeper questions that are always going to be there, and if left unanswered, always going to leave us very starved for meaning. I think that you end up with a very, very sad, very gloomy, and very, frankly, monstrous worldview that sees everything as a complete accident. And so, as you think about that, Jamie, and you think about how people view themselves and other human beings, what are some other things that come into play as we talk about this and why it's important to have a biblical view of humanity?
Yeah, I think the why, you know, you see evidenced around us all the time. You see it in abortion, you know, it a mother's choice whether to allow or not allow the life within them. You see it in the assisted suicide aspect and laws built around that, allowing people to legally end their life. You know, culturally, it wasn't that long ago that we were arresting Dr. Kevorkian for literally doing exactly that, right? Because it was culturally abhorrent at that point, and then now it's pretty well embraced today. Of course, you know, especially here on the west coast of the United States, Washington, Oregon, California, where you can legally end life. And I think culturally we're moving more and more towards just allowing our sick, our especially elderly sick, to just die, or even hasten their death because of their drag on the healthcare system and society and, you know, all these sorts of things. And you see that kind of policy in Canada and even in Europe to some degree. So it kind of shows you where we're going. And you ask, you know, how did that happen? How do we go from, and it's exactly what you're talking about, Jason, is if our view of humanity is built on just cultural acceptance, then it's going to be an ever fluid reality, right? If it's built on something other than, we'll say, objective truth, or more specifically, the way I like to think about it is truth defined by the highest authority. You know, how do we ultimately determine what is truth? It's always got to be defined by he who has, the authority, right? So, who is the greatest witness of an event? Well, the one who actually saw it, right? Not the one who described it or wrote it or read it later. Who's the highest authority when it comes to the law? Well, the government is. You know, who's the highest authority to culture and society and understanding of humanity? Well, that goes to, you know, what we call the law of God, which is literally the inherent design of God, based on the big four, right? The authority four, that God is the creator of all things, that God is the orderer of all things, that God is the highest or sustainer of all things. And then, of course, God is the highest authority as well. We see in Hebrews 6, right? God goes out, looks for a higher authority than himself. And of course, he doesn't find one, because he alone is God, right? Isaiah 43, 10 and 11. No God before him, no God after him, no other God. It's just him, right? He is the highest authority. So when you then look at the fundamentals of human value, what God says, it becomes the actual and becomes the bedrock, we'll say, the foundation. I was trying to think of a word, but it wasn't coming to me. The foundation for then all beliefs to be built out of. At least, you know, do I want, if I want a value of humanity that isn't shifting, that literally remains the same, I'm only going to find that in the description of God or the design of God, the understanding of God towards humanity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing about when we think of just the most common issues of our day, they're all really about answering the question, what are we? Who are we? What does it mean to be human? Because, you know, you think about, you know, not just abortion, not just marriage. Even if you're coming from a more traditional background, then there's still the question of, does my value come from what I do or who I am inherently? You know, I think it's very easy for someone, maybe especially someone from more like the boomer generation, to look to their career. And, you know, people ask the question right after you meet someone, it's, so what do you do? I'm an architect, or I'm a police officer, you know, that's immediately what we, and it does become, in a sense, an identity. It's certainly always going to be a part of our identity, what we're doing, but is that the thing that gives your life value? Well, it's easy to get to that point in thinking, and that's even before you look at all the, you know, the what we'd call the big cultural issues of the day, like abortion, how do we deal with poverty, how do we help people who are most vulnerable in society. Again, it all is rooted in they are image bearers of God, and that's why we even would care. Because, you know, if human cloning makes sense from an economic, technological, and scientific perspective, then why not? You know, go for it. It's gonna, if anything, just expand our horizons. We're gonna be able to accomplish more things. And so from a purely rational perspective, it could make a lot of sense to want to go that route. But then when you factor in that we are made in God's image, human cloning comes with a whole raft of implications, and some of which could be really, really serious. And so, you know, it is the central question, I think. And when you look at ethics, politics, social issues where people differ, it is coming back to that human question of what are we? And of course, we'll get into this, I think, as well. But the other side of it is what has gone wrong with us? And, you know, we can't talk about a biblical view of humanity and only emphasize, of course, our dignity and this royalty side of us. There's also this fallen, broken side of us that is just as important to know, because even though it's not where our dignity and value comes from, it explains why we are the way we are. And, you know, as much as, you know, people would want to have a more optimistic view of humanity, and it's interesting how basically every other world religion does have a somewhat optimistic view of humanity. You know, someone could look at Mormonism, for example. You have the potential to become a god with your own planet, right? Well, that sounds really optimistic, and that sounds like something that sounds really good on the surface, but does it deal with the facts about us? And obviously, the biblical view of humanity is that, first of all, there's a creature-creator distinction that's always going to be there, number one. So there's always going to be this upper limit to our potential. But beyond that, we do believe that we're born in sin, and that this is an inherited aspect, just like we inherited blue eyes, brown hair, whatever. We also inherited a sin nature from our parents all the way back to Adam and Eve. And you simply can't make sense of humanity without understanding that. And I think it was G.K. Chesterton who said the best evidence for Christianity is the fact that original sin is just so apparent, and any attempt to try to, you know, overlook it is just an obvious overlooking of what is clearly in front of us. And it's not just looking at crime rates. It's not just looking at you know, the fact that we all lock our doors at night, right? Well, okay, not everybody. If you live in a city, though, you're probably going to want to lock your doors. And why do we do these kind of things? Why do we have passwords for our computers? Why do we protect our assets in different ways? Well, it's because of this corruption in the human heart. And the fact is that makes us not trust each other. And then you think about, well, okay, people need more education. People need to be, you know, given the right tools, and money will help solve our issues. Maybe that's more the problem. But then you look at the facts. Again, you look at Nazi Germany, and you have some of the most educated, some of the wealthiest, some of the technologically advanced tools available to these people. And yet, how could they produce some of the most barbaric, cruel, and frankly hateful people in the last 100 years? So, you know, anytime you try to resolve that tension of, well, here's why humans are acting so wickedly, it's because of these pressures on them from all these angles. No, it is a problem with the human heart. It comes from within, and that's what the Bible explains to us, and even says that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? So we can't even understand the wickedness in our own heart. And as much as we may want to justify ourselves and explain, you know, when I blew up the other day and I yelled at my kids or whatever, that wasn't me. You know, we like to say things like that, or I wasn't being myself. Actually, that was exactly in character for who you are, for who I am, because that's what it means to be a fallen human being, and that's why we need a redeemer.
Totally, 100%. And even recognize, I think, a step more than that. I think a lot of times we like to be like, well, we just didn't know, right? That we did evil because we didn't know better. And it's like, but again, the Bible says that's not the case, right? John 3:19, not only did we know the truth, but we actually loved our evil more than the truth. And so it really shoots a hole in that argument of like, well, we only do evil because we don't know better. No, the problem is, we have this thing called the wisdom of man. Proverbs talks about this a lot. Like Proverbs 14:12, for example, you know, there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof is death. And the recognition that there really is only two forms of wisdom. There's the fear of the Lord. And, you know, biblically speaking, the fear of the Lord is not just like a reverential awe, but it's an actual obedience to God's word, which is to say, I don't always understand why God created things the way he did, or why God ordered things the way he did, or why God says the things he says. But I recognize that it's good, because God is the designer, right? And even when it's opposite how I think or feel or what seems like good logical wisdom to me, I have to go, but it's not. Because the wisdom of man always leads to death. And you see that borne out. You know, you use the Nazis. You can use so many examples all throughout human history. Think of Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge. You know, they systematically executed three whole generations of people because they had this philosophic view of humanity. Again, you know, it's what we call Marxism or communism. This idea that you, the individual, actually have no value. The only thing that actually matters is the collective good. And in a model like that, then the corporate is what has value, not the constituent parts. So to kill a person means nothing. To kill thousands of people or millions of people, or think of Mao Zedong, there in China, and you know they systematically killed 50 million people. Think of Stalin in Russia. Think of Rwanda, the two different ethnic groups that were at war with each other, or I guess it was more genocide, so the one was killing the other, right? Just because they didn't like them. They, for whatever reason, decided that they had no value. And so you notice all the trends center back in this point that really humanity doesn't inherently have any value at all. It's just the value that a society places on it. And we're seeing, you know, the modern genocide, which is transgenderism, the idea that, you know, mutilating the flesh, literally destroying the body, is somehow, you know, an actual societal good, that it's actually a blessed thing, that it actually frees people from the oppression of God's design, that, you know, masculinity means something, that maleness means something, or femaleness means something. And it's all a direct slap in the face of God's good design as presented again in Genesis 1, you know, that we're made in the image of God, or Psalms 139, right? That you're fearfully and wonderfully made, that God has good purpose in your maleness or femaleness, that God has a good design for humanity that is separate from all of God's other creatures and creation. And it does totally away with all of that. And you go, well, that was a period of time where men just got off track, or they were just wrong. But we're more enlightened now. And it's like, well, are we though? In fact, somebody made the case that, you know, we literally argue the exact same things for abortion today that we used to argue for slavery. And I don't know that I've ever heard that argument before, personally, Jason, but the more I thought about it, it's like, literally, these are exactly the same arguments. It's the exact same kind of devalue or dehumanizing of people, because inherently, if we get away from God as the authority and his good design and his good declaration of the inherent value of men and women, then we end up with really nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen that parallel, because it, again, it's centered on what does it mean to be human, and where does our value, do we have an intrinsic value? I mean, if it's wrong to enslave an innocent human being, it's also got to be wrong to kill an innocent human being. And I'll just say this, the best arguments that were used against slavery in the Civil War era and before that by William Wilberforce and others in the UK, were all rooted in a biblical view of humanity. And in the same way, the best arguments, although there's lots of philosophical and I recognize there's other approaches, but the best arguments against abortion are biblical. And frankly, you know, you can have somebody who is, quote, pro-choice, but also say something like, I believe all human beings bear the image of God. And so there is that, I would call it, you know, a cognitive dissonance that goes on there. But here's another similarity, just to kind of draw it out. In slavery, and Abraham Lincoln used this argument when he was talking, I think, with Stephen Douglas, I'm pretty sure, but he said that, you know, okay, so you're saying it's okay to enslave the black man. Okay, so by that reasoning, if somebody has a lighter shade of skin, then he has more of a right to enslave that who has than to enslave the one who has a darker shade of skin. And so, you know, seriously, if that's it, if it is based on skin color, then that would be the logical result of that argument, would be saying, yeah, as soon as you have a lighter skin person, they have the inherent right to enslave the person with slightly darker skin. And again, Lincoln was showing the absurdity of that notion to begin with, that black people should be enslaved. And in the same way, we could say there's that same kind of gradation argument that's used. I'm not for abortion up till 9 months, just through 20 weeks. Okay, but again, what is inherently different about the 19-week in utero baby versus the 21-week in utero baby? Why that magical, well, you know, the baby's going to be better supported, more likely chance of survival. Yeah, but that's based on technology today. And if we're going in this direction, that trajectory, obviously you see where this argument goes. It makes no sense to say one human being has more right to life than another simply because of stage of development, in the same way that one human being has more right to enslave another simply because of skin color or shade of skin color. So I think it is a good parallel. I think it makes actually really good sense to use that argument and draw that out and say, look, these people were dehumanized. Today we agree that they were fellow human beings, but at the time, the argument was they were inferior and that therefore more expendable. And the same process is used in abortion. I also want to bring in this, Jamie, just as we're talking about the biblical view of humanity, and we're doing this in a kind of a small time frame. It's obviously that we were created with this dualistic component that we are both body and soul. And I know some theologians would want to emphasize, and the spirit. But in any case, what we all would agree on is there's a material side to us, our bodies, and there's this immaterial side to us, the soul, the mind, the spirit, that lives on after death, and that there's this reality that we, even though God created us as embodied people, holistically, body and soul, that there's this ongoing existence, the consciousness of our soul lives on. And this is not only according to the pages of the Bible, but this is something that I think is showing up in science. More and more people are recognizing there's this evidence that the soul does continue to exist and to continue to have conscious awareness after the body has completely shut down. And while we don't have time to get into all that evidence on this episode, I think it's just worth considering again. And Jesus would even be another person to point to when he said, do not fear those who kill the body but can't do anything else. Fear the one, talking about God, who can destroy both soul and body in hell. And I think the emphasis there is we are eternal. We're made to live forever. We're made to live in an eternal relationship with the God who made us. And again, to bring in the gospel here, that's why we need Jesus. Our sin problem, which we've been talking about, and our misunderstanding about who we are is all rooted in sin. And the remedy is God had to become a man. And so to think not only are we made with incredible dignity in his image, but the God who made us actually became one of us, fully human in every way, but without sin. And he was therefore he could be our redeemer and pay for the sins of human beings because he was a human being. And this is our great hope as Christians. And this is why we need to have a biblical view of humanity, because without it, we can't really understand who we are. We can't understand our purpose. We can't understand what our hope is or where we're going. And I think that as much as, you know, people will speak with confidence about knowing who we are, at the end of the day, if we try to define ourselves and determine right from wrong for ourselves, we end up in a place of despair, inevitably.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.